You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Hey guys, it's Nick. Welcome. This week we're talking about an animated classic, actually. One that I enjoyed a lot more than I thought I would. 101 Dalmatians. I mean, all of us grew this movie. Like, it's. I saw it growing up a million times. It's really good. However, it's interesting because I had not watched it in a very long time. I was skeptical. I think a lot of 60s movies move kind of slow. And this one was great. I think you'll enjoy it. If you can find a copy, which is hard, but if you could find one, you should watch it. I think you'll like it very, very much. So, very quickly, thanks for listening. You know, stay tuned. Next month, we'll do our listener request stuff. It's really exciting. We've got some good picks. But also, if you're listening to this when it comes out, Cineprov, of course, is... we had a show a few weeks ago that I was on. Thanks for coming for Anger 18. But we are not doing one the first Thursday of the month this time. We're doing one the last Thursday almost. And it's not a Thursday. It's a Saturday. On 420, we're doing Fantastic Four. But not any of the recent ones. We're doing the Roger Corman one. So stay tuned for that. It's a classic of a movie that shouldn't have existed and really doesn't. So enjoy. Thanks, guys.
Oh, Pongo, it's her. It's that devil woman.
Oh, must be Cruella, your dearly devoted old schoolmate. Cruella de Vil. That's it.
The PWR Spot Show is on the air every single week for your wrestling listening pleasure. We talk about professional wrestling. None of that fake stuff here, just Hulk Hogan, pile drivers, and cage matches. So join us at the ProWrestlingRoundtable.com or on ESONetwork.com.
Roger, she'll hear you.
Cruella de Vil.
Let her in, Nanny.
Anita, darling, how are you?
Welcome to Myopia Defend Your Childhood, this week with Ira Glass. This week we're watching the animated 1961 version of 101 Dalmatians with Wolfgang something. Wolfgang Reithman, what was that, the director's name? Anyway, I'll let Daniel get into this. This is his month to explain what we're doing. But first, we're watching the Disney animated classic 101 Dalmatians, your greatest plea to spay and neuter your pets. I'm Nick Hoffman, host of Myopia Defend Your Childhood and Riff Ron Cineprov, and on panel we have...
Hello, this is Daniel, and I frequently use blackface to get away from situations I don't want to be in.
I'm Charlie, and I'm just here.
Thank you, buddy. So, Daniel, why don't you explain your month to remind the people who didn't hear last month?
And... Okay. Well, one of the big trends with Disney is to remake a bunch of their old properties. And when I say old, I mean from our childhood. So they've had Beauty and the Beast. They have Aladdin coming up. They have The Lion King coming up. And everybody's like freaking out like this is some new trend. And frankly, it's not. There have been a bunch of remakes when we were growing up of stuff from our parents' childhood. So that's really what this is. We're comparing... the older versions versus the versions that came out in the 90s that we potentially saw in theaters.
And so we're doing 101 Dalmatians now. So that means next week it'll be the Glenn Close live action one.
Oh boy.
And if you didn't listen to last week's episode, we're also going to do The Nutty Professor, starting with the Jerry Lewis, who I love.
Oh, hi, Evan.
Followed by the Eddie Murphy version. The next week.
With the biting and the screaming and the hiving.
And Eddie Murphy playing 12 characters, I think, of this one. And a young, who's the comedian? Dave Chappelle.
Yeah, he was.
Who does a women be shopping joke, which stops the movie dead, if I recall.
Was Jada Pinkett Smith in that one, too?
She was the love interest.
That's okay.
Yeah. I haven't seen Jerry Lewis, but I imagine his love interest is a busty blonde who practically falls out of her top. It's a movie from the 60s. That's kind of how you go. And the French loved it.
Oh, do you remember at the Oscars when Eddie Murphy presented Jerry Lewis the Gene Herschel Award and kissed him on the forehead?
I do not, but I assume that happened.
It did
happen. Then they helped a bunch of kids
bunch of sick kids. Was it MS? What's the Jerry Lewis Foundation?
Muscular dystrophy.
MD. There you go. So 101 Dalmatians is an animated classic, not by Wolfgang Rethart, which who did everything else. This is Clyde Jeromey, I think that's how you say it, and Hamilton Lusk. As IMDb tells me, as Hamilton S. Lusk this time, because you want to make sure you're right.
Okay, who wrote the novel on the Tribune? They've got them listed.
Oh, it's like a kid's book.
Yeah, yeah. It's a woman. Dale? No.
Dodie,
thank you.
Okay, quick question. Did anybody else's elementary school have one of those programs where it's like, hey, if you read a certain number of books, you'll get points, and then if
we
you get a certain
number... We ate Pizza Hut tonight.
Yes.
How
yeah,
dare
exactly.
you, sir?
No, because...
The Read It program, I think it's called.
You know, we had something similar, too.
In my school, it was called Booksharp, but that was a Booksharp book, so I actually read this novel when I was in elementary school.
No kidding.
Yeah. It had a...
Musical number?
Oh, sure. They interrupted every page with it. Although, this isn't a musical, which is strange for Disney. The biggest thing I remember is the Dalmatians had like a brown-spotted caretaker Dalmatian.
Oh, so it was like Nana from Peter Pan. So there was a bigger dog that was like their caretaker?
Kind of, if I remember right. It was,
wait, what?
Well, it was like this caretaker maid that the Dalmatians had for themselves that was a Dalmatian with brown spots.
Well, there you go. Charlie, since Daniel made this pick, why don't you give us a plot synopsis?
Well, it's very simple. It is the animated version basically starts with the guy living in Paris at the time, and he's got a dog, Pongo. He's walking his dog in the park. Pongo sees Perdita, Purdy for short, and his and her pet. It's funny because they kept referring to the owners as their pets.
That was hilarious.
I was amused by that. There's hijinks. They meet, and that they get married shortly thereafter. Purdy gets pregnant. There's a lot of comedy about Pongo being expectant father. Dalmatians are born. Cruella wants the puppies because, well, she's psychotic and wants to turn them into a fur coat. And she steals the puppies in what I can call sort of a precursor to Home Alone, the way those two guys just pretty much bumbled throughout.
Oris and Jasper.
Yes, Oris and Jasper. So basically they get stolen and hijinks ensue as the dogs try to get their puppies back.
Beautiful.
So they were living in Paris? Because I thought
no,
it was London.
The cold open is Paris, and then when they fall in love, and then they fall in love, and then they move to London.
Yes.
Okay.
But whatever. It starts off with some great narration of Pongo being like, you know, my pet looks lonely. He needs a mate.
Yes. It is great.
I
felt like I was playing an episode of Millennial Millions from Saturday Night Live, though, because it's like, well, we're living in Paris near the park. It's a good starter home. And I'm like, oh, damn it all, f*** you.
It's like this narrow townhouse, and it's the view is of the Eiffel Tower as we pan in, if I recall correctly.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, how can you tell that you're in Paris in a cartoon? Well, there's the Eiffel Tower, and there's Eric the Triomphe. That's all you got.
Yeah, and there's so. Exactly. At least one person carrying groceries with a French loaf sticking out
exactly.
of the bag.
Yeah. And she looks like her dog. Also, this is the beginning part is Pongo like trying to find a mate for her or for his like pet,
his
yeah.
owner. Yeah.
And what he's doing
is a struggling songwriter who, if he's living again in a townhouse in Paris, he is struggling in the same way.
Clearly
Phil Spector was struggling yeah. at the time.
He's a starving artist, as you do.
How's he going to pay last week's rent?
Yeah. I'm not going to bake
it. Did you just make, a rent reference?
It's what I got. I don't know.
I'm going to call you Benny for the rest of the episode.
I don't know who that is.
You haven't seen the... never mind. We're fine. You're fine because it's going to be live on NBC next week.
Oh, don't go... No!
I think... I mean, if anything is...
I don't think y'all are allowed to make fun of it because Rent is a Gen X thing.
Well, and I was going to say, like, is this NBC trying to set back the gay community 20 years? Because that's... I mean...
Right? Okay. We're done with Rent. Moving on.
Yeah.
We're not going to pay. But anyway, so they do a thing which I thought was funny, which is how people look like their pets.
Oh, that was,
who is that school mom?
That's classic Disney.
That is. I mean, the woman who looks like her pug is.
Yeah.
And then at one point they stumble across her in the park, and Pongo is horrified.
Yeah, that's exactly.
Well, I'm totally swiping left on that.
Now, remind me, what was the Pongo's pet's name?
Was it Roger?
Roger.
Roger.
And then Purdy is Perdita. anyway, Anita. It's
quick
Anita.
Question.
It's
Anita. Roger and Anita. Anita and Roger.
The only voice actor in the opening credits, and this had a long opening credit sequence, was Thurl Ravenscroft.
Yeah.
Who's, you know, Tony the Tiger. Who was he voicing in this?
I think he's just a bunch of the old dogs. Wasn't he the colonel?
He might have been. I haven't checked.
That
on
seems
the Tribune.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, whatever.
Here's the thing. None of them were really, like, in my opinion. Well, none of them are names that I recognize today, but they were probably popular back then.
Well, back in the day, not really. I mean, voiceover artists were exclusively voiceover artists.
Oh, okay.
But it's still Disney. So, I mean, like, Pongo, I'm sure, was someone. He sounded like, yeah, okay, he has a career. He was even in Inglourious Basterds.
Wait, Pongo was in Inglourious Basterds?
Yeah, his name is Rod Taylor. He played Winston Churchill.
No.
And he was in The Birds.
Wait, as
Mitch.
The main character? That was Pongo?
Yeah, so fuck you, Dan.
All right.
Fuck.
Well, there we go.
And he was in the 1960 Time Machine. He played H.G. Wells. So.
Oh, well, nobody cares about the 1960 Time Machine.
I mean, it's right. It's the Guy Pearce version. Everyone loves the Guy Pearce version, right?
Wait, they do?
No. Okay. But for a second there, I remembered that Guy Pearce was in it. I was thinking of the Tom Cruise... the War of the Worlds, which I know is one of Daniel's least favorite. I just remember being completely indifferent. It's a nothing, whatever.
Are we talking about War of the Worlds?
Yeah,
or the Time
I know
Machine?
You hated it.
Actually,
no, I hate both of these.
Them.
I hate both of
all
these.
All of the above.
Yeah.
So the only other character we have not really introduced yet is Cruella de Vil, who apparently in this version was schoolmates with Anita.
Schoolmates with Anita. Yeah, apparently they were good friends or something.
Okay, so I just
And then she drank from the wrong cup and aged into Skeletor?
I just want to run through this real quick.
She chose
Okay, go on.
Okay, she has pale skin. She has very prominent cheekbones. She refers to everyone as darling. She's obsessed with young things. Is this who Michael Jackson wanted to turn himself into?
This is Anita's ex-boyfriend.
There you go.
Who's having changes. He's not there yet. This is the 1960s. But she's dressed like a flapper girl who came out the wrong side, right?
I don't even know what they were trying to accomplish with her. It's...
They needed a villain?
They needed a villain. Okay.
Actually, you know who she looks like? 1960s Liz Taylor, doesn't she? Oh, darling,
no,
darling,
no,
those
no.
puppies.
She looks like 1980s Liz Taylor.
There's just, she fell
skinnier,
out of the wrong
though.
Side of something.
Skinnier.
I will say, the one thing I will give the live action, which we're obviously doing next, is Glenn Close knows what she's doing. This woman is all over the place.
Yes. No, but, you know, as far as villains go, Cruella de Vil is actually pretty awesome, actually.
Well, she is iconic.
Clearly. And it's funny because, you know, they added in all this devil and satanic imagery. I don't know if you noticed, like her phone had, like, little devils on it. And then, of course, her license plate said... DeVille in
Which
such
is
a way
devil because
yeah,
that's
devil.
Her last name.
Yeah, exactly. And then like her estate had all these iconic you know, just basically pictures of demons and stuff like that. So they
I
were
feel
really
like we're in
laying it on
church
thick.
Lady territory right now. It's like, well, who could Cruella de Vil be? She's named de Vil and she's got horns on her phone. Could she be Satan?
Well, and I mean, and to wit, the hunter doesn't even have a face in Bambi. Like, you know, like, and that was 18 years before this. It was like 42.
Well, and this was just, I mean, she wanted to take puppies and make a fur coat out of it. I mean, that's a monster.
She wanted a fur coat.
Well, I mean, and like, and one of the things I hate about the other one, which we'll get to, there's a backstory. Here, there's no backstory. She's just evil. She's just like, these are pretty.
Yeah.
I live for fur. I worship fur. Is there William. Is there a woman alive who doesn't love fur?
Like, I mean, yeah, she's just reprehensibly evil. And it's great. It's great. I think it's refreshing because they took a basic, simple concept of something that would be terrifying to the dogs and horrifying to humans.
Yeah.
And they created the perfect villain for this movie.
Yeah.
And she's fantastic. And the dogs know it immediately. The people are being polite. Roger gets it. I love Roger.
Roger gets it.
I mean, and we could just talk about the models on these people. First of all, I think in an effort to make the dogs look less crazy than the people, they give these people the craziest noses I've ever seen.
I noticed that, yeah.
Yeah, Roger's nose especially.
Well, and Horace and Jasper. Yeah. Horace's is practically a scythe. It's crazy.
Jesus. Yeah.
And once they fall in love, everything changes about them. Anita and Roger, their hair lightens. Their skin tone lightens. Like they just seem happier. They round out their eyes.
Exactly.
But that nose, man, it could break glass. So it's amazing.
I have to ask, is that how marriage works, Nick?
Oh, yeah. I lightened. I gained 20 pounds, though. Like, I didn't look better. I've been married 11 years. Candace looks great. I've turned into a chud person.
We all have. It's just aging.
But I will say, like, it's something that Disney, the idea could be done by anyone, but this is so through and through a Disney movie. Like, yeah.
I really like the shot where it's Cruella trying to buy the puppies and going, blast this wretched pen. And then she sprays ink all over Roger and Pongo.
Yeah, adding more spots similar to both of them.
And they both have spots. Yeah, that was cute.
And they have identical facial expressions, too. It's hilarious. Well,
and that was the charming thing about it, is that they made all the humans to be, you know, very connected with the animals.
Yeah, and again, like, if this is my pet and this is my pet.
Yeah.
They both hate Cruella.
Exactly.
And while Purdy is afraid of him, Anita's like, well, I'll be nice because she's still an old friend. Mm-hmm. And the two of them in their little snit with him and his pipe and the spots everywhere, it's just, it's so good.
One of the big unique things for me about this is it's not a musical.
Yeah.
Which every other Disney movie practically is. There's maybe two songs because Roger's a songwriter.
Yeah.
And this is what Bert's one of the songs because he writes something about Cruella de Vil.
Which is.
I love that song.
The catchiest.
It is. It is Cruella de Vil. Cruella de Vil.
If she doesn't scare you, no evil thing will.
That's some good stuff. No, you're right. It didn't, which is really interesting because apparently, so a little bit of the lore, the history. The movie they did right before this was Sleeping Beauty, and apparently they lost their shirt on that.
Oh, yeah.
They lost money big time on that.
Well, so, Disney, on a lot of their animated stuff, they frequently lost money.
Well, exactly. Until this movie. They basically changed how they did animation. So, interesting fact. They worked with Xerox, and they used Xerox technology to reproduce all the backgrounds. It's the first movie where all the backgrounds were not hand-drawn.
Oh.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Which is why it has that very unique, scratchy, blurry, dark edge feel in the backgrounds.
That looks almost... it reminded me a little bit of Aristocats, but just because it has that kind of... They had to keep the background simple.
Yes. Well, and Aristocats uses the same technology, because basically every movie since 1961 has used this type of duplication technology.
Well, Hanna-Barbera especially were like the masters of it.
Exactly. But I have to admit, they made it work because that the weird, scratchy, hand-drawn look to the backgrounds looked fantastic.
See, I didn't notice the background as much, but the characters all have this very hand-drawn, very dark outline, scratchy appearance to them, which I thought worked.
Yeah, and they had to do that to make them stand out or to draw away from the backgrounds, because you'll notice you don't notice the backgrounds as much because of the amazing four color look to everything that's in the foreground.
Wait, yeah. There were backgrounds in this movie?
Mm. Well, until it becomes Schindler's List and they're marching through the snow.
We'll get there.
But yeah, I'm looking at what came right before. Peter Pan was, and Lady and the Tramp are beautiful, but
They're all hand drawn. Oh, did you notice that all the dogs from Lady and the Tramp were?
I did.
Yes.
When they do the whatever, the midnight bark or whatever.
The twilight bark.
Twilight bark. There's a pound they go by, and all of them are there except of course the titular Lady and the Tramp.
Yeah, exactly. It's fantastic.
And
is what's her name there? Peggy Lee.
Yeah.
Yes. All right. Yes. And they start out with Jock, actually, and they go from Jock. Jock was like the first dog in the barking chain, yeah. I think, or the second dog. Yeah. So. And then it just moved along the way.
My daughter calls that the dogs eating dinner movie. Because that's the movie poster.
Oh. That's so cute.
It is cute. That movie's interesting. I think it still holds up. I think this one might be more charming.
No, this one is amazing. I saw it when I was a very young child. I'm single digits, I'm talking.
Yeah.
And I haven't seen it since. And it's amazing.
It's been almost 200 years since he's seen it. Yeah. Make yourself sound like the oldest person on the show. which you may be, but you're not that old.
That's true. But I mean, just the concept of like, I really rarely, when we discuss movies, did I see this movie when I was a child. I usually saw it when I was in college.
Sure.
This movie I truly had not seen since like I was 6, 7, or 8.
I will say though, that's a big F you to Disney though, because it's a hard movie to find.
Oh, like, totally.
I don't know when the release I saw. I imagine it came out on DVD around 96. I had to get a copy from the library because it's impossible to find. You found it at Videodrome, which is a local store.
Yes.
I won't tell you how I found it.
There was a black envelope that appeared on my doorstep one day. But yeah, it's just for a movie.
Speaking of Videodrome, I mean, James Woods just showed up with a copy of it in front of my house.
Oh, that's exactly it. The hand came out of the television and handed it to me.
And James, he reached into his little chest vagina. Yeah. And
exactly.
Took it out.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, but the problem is if it comes out of your TV, you have to clean the TV. It's just at least such a smudge. Everything does. Why have 4K if you can't watch?
Especially with Debbie Harry on the TV screen. So many smudges afterwards.
So many smudges. Gross. All that conversation just then? That was gross. anyway, so Purdy gives birth to 15 puppies.
Correct.
They're all named.
14.
No. Just they do 14. Not name all of them. They only name like 6 or 7.
That's true.
There's Lucky. There's the fat one who I think is Rolly.
Rolo. Rolly or Rolo? I can't remember which.
I think it was
Fatty.
Yeah.
Hey, Fatty.
The fatty one.
And there's the one with the spot over his eye that I think they name
Patch.
And you know, it's cute. At first, Cruella, who also, when she smokes out of her long,
Hunter S. Thompson cigarette holder.
Yeah, it's green because she's evil. And even though Roger smokes out of a pipe and it's just normal smoke color, when Cruella's waving her wand, she's evil. She's the closest thing to the Wicked Witch, to Maleficent we have. I mean,
no, and she is, like, Maleficent is the most evil Disney villain. Cruella is, like, number two.
Yeah.
Why is Maleficent the most evil?
Because
she said hell.
She swore.
She did. She said hell in Sleeping Beauty. I remembered that.
Okay. This was the movie before, too. And actually, a lot of the model looks very similar.
Yeah.
Down to the huge cheekbones and the evil.
She could fly with those cheekbones. She just needs to stand in front of a good breeze, and those cheekbones would lift her right up.
I mean, Angelina Jolie was the right casting. So, you want to talk about an unwatchable movie that I could not care about?
Oh, my God. Yikes.
I think the trailer just had her going, why? And you're just like, I don't know. You have to tell me to see it. You can't just ask why.
Weren't you an Oscar nominee at one point, Angelina? No, you were an Oscar winner. And you're in Maleficent.
What did she win for?
Girl Interrupted.
And then she directed that movie that was nominated too. Was World War II POW movie that came out?
I know what you're talking about. I forget the name.
Yeah, it was forgettable.
Oh, it was Tomb Raider.
Yeah, that's right.
That's it, yeah.
Oh, that's right. She won for best breasts, the Academy Award for Best Boobs in Tomb Raider. There you go. God, what a train wreck. Previous episode, by the way. Listen to that. Anyway, let's just move ahead. We're introduced to Horace and Jasper, who I guess will, on one hand, become the archetype that are the wet bandits. I mean, what can I say?
Yeah. Well, and I think they're supposed to be Laurel and Hardy because one's extremely skinny and the other one's extremely fat.
Sort of
that's who they're supposed to be.
Sort of like from Home Alone.
Well, yeah, but Home Alone was 30 years later.
Well, that's what we're saying. That Chris Columbus must have seen this and like, that's what I need. I need. Who's the most annoying short person I know?
Oh, Joe Piscopo.
Joe Pesci.
Sorry.
Joe Piscopo.
Oh my God! Yeah.
He said Joe Piscopo, and then Piscopo punched him, and then he was like, "Hey, Pesci!" And then Pesci tried to murder him, but he was so cute and little.
Well, see, the thing about Joe Pesci is he's like a clown. He amuses me.
Yeah, there you go.
Not so much. Not so much with these guys.
Now, Danny Stern. Daniel Stern was the get because without. Yeah. Otherwise, it literally just becomes Goodfellas, like, because Goodfellas came out the same year as Home Alone.
Yeah, it did.
Oh, so, wow. like without Daniel Stern being goofy, Joe Pesci is just about to swear at a child, right? I mean,
yeah.
Home Alone is one I watch every single year. I love
it. It's classic. But I mean, the antics of these guys bumbling around trying to capture all these dogs, hilarious.
Well, the thing is, though, is they succeed. Well, that's true. And they fool the maid into thinking they're electricians.
I think for the power company specifically.
Yeah, for the power company.
Right.
We need to check your meters. Like, it's something like that.
Well, they sort of fool her, but mostly, like, she's like, wait a second, and then all of a sudden she's locked in the closet.
That's right. Not the wallet inspector. Like, it's... it is what it is. They lock her in the pantry.
Yeah.
And once in the pantry, they take the puppies, and immediately Anita and Pongo know what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
They run back. The puppies are gone. And
well, it ends with that their housekeeper yelling in the street, "Police! Police!"
It's heartbreaking, man. This is a good it's a hard scene.
I mean, it's terrifying. The puppies are being stolen for the purposes of making a coat.
Well, and you realize something is wrong because again, she even says like, "Why would you only take the puppies?" Like, there is something very horror movie about it, right? Like, this is 1960s. This is Hitchcock-ish, right? This is very like. They didn't take the silver. Why didn't they take the silver and only the puppies? Like, they realize something weird is happening.
Yes.
And Roger's immediately like, it's that bitch friend
it's
of yours.
Cruella.
Like, well, her name is Cruella de Vil. Like,
yeah.
It's like, oh, Sinestro's never going to be a good guy. His name is Sinestro. Cruella is not going to be, like, Grinch doesn't mean anything. Her heart's not going to grow 3 sizes, you know?
Yeah.
You know? Oh, fuck.
I'm
Alfred Hitchcock, and I'm here to introduce you to the most fearsome villain we've come up with, Cruella.
Now, just since we're here, and Charlie and I are your biggest fans, of course, Mr. Suttis, can you quickly do your Richard Nixon for us?
Oh, yes, please.
Well, I kidnapped those puppies because I wanted myself a good coat to run in 68. Because that's what we need, and that's what the American people want. Agnew, get me those puppies!
Now, you know, Mr. Nixon, those puppy coats are just not going to pass through the Soviet blockade.
Well, what do the Chinese think?
The Chinese have eaten the dog, sir. It's very awkward. That was a Matt Quinn joke for you, since he's not on panel today. And you know that's exactly the joke he would have made. I love him. He's off selling his book. I guess since he's not here to plug it, you should buy Flashing Steel, Flashing Fire, and whatever he's hawking this week, Thing in the Woods. And he has a book coming out in October, so keep an eye out for that. Little People, Big Guns. I've seen the cover art. It's as offensive as it sounds.
But it's sure to be a hit.
I've seen the cover art too, and yeah, it's
something.
It makes me want to read it.
Actually, yeah, it just draw you and be like, oh, this is gonna be a train wreck. I gotta read this.
Oh, we shouldn't call it a train wreck.
No, in the fun, awesome way.
Oh.
In the way a movie that Stallone would make yesterday would be a train wreck. It'll be competently done.
The whole point is, it's not a terribly written thing. It's actually like all these things are gonna start happening and. Cascading and fun.
I'd like to go ahead and endorse the writings of Matthew W. Quinn.
It's a
little. They entertain me.
It's a little person with a machine gun standing on top of a dead badger. Little People Big Guns is effectively the literary equivalent of Bullet to the Head, the Stallone movie that came out in 2012. Which if you haven't seen, get yourself the strongest whiskey you can find and watch it. I've watched it with Zeus recently. It's phenomenal. Anyway, at this point they go to Frankenstein's castle.
Well, first of all, I do want to draw attention to the fact that when Purdy realizes she has lost her children, it's heartbreaking.
It is the saddest
thing. It is actually one of the saddest things I think I've seen in animation. And that includes Bambi's mother being killed.
Yeah.
That happens off camera, doesn't it?
Yes, but you see the thing.
Yes, but you see Bambi, the reaction.
Yeah. This here is she curls up next to the dog bed, and it is...
Oh.
And Pongo is there, and Roger is right behind. It's well done.
Is there... Well... You know,
it's kind of funny. We're talking about our childhoods, and nobody's mentioned Mustafa yet. Oh, Mufasa.
Mufasa.
Not Mustafa. Mufasa. God damn it.
Well, no. I mean, what they did—they did a fantastic job of capturing the essence of dogs.
Yeah.
I mean, they clearly studied dogs for this movie.
Yeah.
Because the animation's on point. The characterizations of the dogs is on point. It's amazing.
Well, and more specifically, these people love dogs.
Yes.
It's very clear.
Like, yes.
Well, and
this is a labor of love, clearly.
Well, and you bring up Mufasa, which is fine, but that scene where he's like Papa and he's curling up under the paw and all that stuff, it's tragic, but that movie is tonally like, it's like learning to drive stick. Like you're shifting gears really hard at first, and then it settles into a nice thing, and it's a masterpiece. I'm not going to say it's not. Here, it all feels very organic. Like you have the greatest day ever, and you realize that it can't be this good for this long, and then it falls apart, and she is heartbroken, and everyone is heartbroken with her, and you can see it in her eyes. Like it's
the guys are heartbroken because they don't know what to do to fix this. It's just you're just watching their world fall apart, and you're just like, oh my God.
Well, and I know we haven't harped this enough, but the dogs can talk. And when they're silent, it's almost more heartbreaking.
Yeah.
Here, it's kind of...
See, I like the opening bit where it's just their narration, but they're not actually talking. It's just from their point of view.
Mm-hmm.
That was good. As they started talking, I didn't necessarily mind it, but...
It became less charming.
Yeah. No. Well, they had to... Basically, the humans are only in it for a very small portion, and they had to drive it along. We'll talk more about when we see the live action, but I think that one of the failures of the live action was that they didn't have talking
The
animals.
Dogs have no personality.
Yeah.
And here you have a very kind of like, you know, a Ghost of Christmas Future, like how can we endure it? Like this kind of, this them staring into bleak nothingness, which is great.
Well, part of the problem though, I don't know if it's really a problem, but one of the things is when they introduce more dogs, instead of being fully developed characters like Pongo and Purdy are, which they are, they're all just a bunch of upper-class twit-of-the-year stereotypes.
Yeah. So at this point, we can get to the dogs are missing. The humans try everything. Scotland Yard can't find the puppies, so they do the Twilight Bark.
Yep.
Which is at the top of the biggest hill in wherever the hell they are now. You know, all those mountains on the far side of London. You know the ones.
The ones in Hyde Park, yeah.
They give the...
they're not so much mountains as they are crates.
Yeah. They're on top of, you know, all the dead, buried, homeless people that died in the plague.
Oh, boy.
And they give this bark, which goes all the way out to the countryside, to the colonel.
Now, I do want to say, that is a fascinating concept, that the dogs start barking here, and it passes there,
yeah,
and it keeps going along like a barking chain all the way until it reaches a goal.
Well, you know what it is?
Hmm.
The beacon is lit. Rowan calls for aid.
Yeah.
yeah, I guess so. Man, it was more exciting when I was describing it as like the dog magic.
Yeah, I like the dog magic. I'm not going to lie. I found that scene fun. All the dogs, and this is where you see the dogs from the Lady and the Tramp kind of through. And
I did like the fact that it reaches the farmland, and then we are introduced to those other characters like the horse and the cat who's, what, a captain?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And no, I think then the colonel is the dog.
The colonel and the cat's captain.
And then what's the horse?
The horse? Do they ever name the horse?
The lieutenant? I don't know. I'm sure everyone has a rank. Everyone has a rank. And they're like, Well, the dog is old. The colonel's old, so he can't hear. And the cat is translating for him.
What does he initially say is missing? It's not puppies, but he confused it with
puddles.
The puddles are missing.
100 right. puddles? I don't know. 15 puddles.
15 puddles are missing?
Oh, yes, yes, Captain. Captain, yes. Puppies would be much more serious.
I am the very model of a modern major general.
That's not bad.
That's actually pretty good.
And then they notice smoke coming out of the old DeVille place. The old no one's lived there for years, but yes. The smoke.
Oh, bibbidi bobbidi.
And then you have, we cut to the old DeVille place where Horace Jesper have not only 15 puppies, but 99.
99 puppies.
And a bitch ain't one.
I was wondering who was going to say that.
Yeah, I got you there first. Anyway, and then Cruella says, the fuzz is everywhere, man. The walls are closing in. You better do it tonight.
Well, that's the part that really shocked me is that they were basically they're like, yeah, we need to kill them. Cruella's like, I don't care how you kill them. Like, she's talking casually about killing the puppies. I didn't think they put that in a Disney movie, but they did.
Yeah, no, this movie gets bleak fast. Yeah. And she's like, do you have chloroform? He's like, nah, I'm out of chloroform because I guess... something
because reasons.
Well, because Silence of the Lambs was happening.
He's creepy.
Well, it's kind of funny because they're watching that game show.
Yeah,
the 50s
quiz show.
Game show. And
what's my crime?
Yeah. And Cruella.
How is that not
them.
A thing?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, we're trash sure people now. Why is that not a thing
it
now?
It needs to happen.
Well, because everybody will recognize like famous crime committers.
Oh, but that's even better. What if it was just like a wall? Or what's that fucking stupid show? The Masked Singer or whatever the crap.
Oh my god, The Masked Singer.
John Wayne
the Masked Killer.
John Wayne Gacy comes out dressed like a pig or something.
He's
and just
dead.
Like,
don't
break a man's heart. You know, you have some crazy serial killer like come out just dressed as, I was the son of Sam. He comes out dressed as McGruff the Crime Dog.
Oh, God.
Ted Cruz is in the... I'm the Zodiac Killer.
He comes out dressed like the Phantom of the Opera. He comes out in a Reagan mask. What am I saying?
Yeah, you know.
Are we talking serial killers or villains from Point Break?
And it can't be both.
Good point. I mean, Patrick Swayze, what was he getting into?
Oh, why that's so both? Funny. Anyway, so at this point it becomes
dark as hell.
If you want to see what this show was really like back in the day, remember that Hunter S. Thompson documentary that they made after he died?
Oh, yes, I do.
Because they show clips from when he was on that show. It's like, okay, one of these is the real Hunter Thompson that hung out with the Hell's Angels. The other two are fake. Guess the real one.
Let me guess, they asked like old white suburbanites to pick this person out?
Yeah absolutely.
Got it. Yeah.
And Gonzo. It's just called Gonzo.
That's it. Yeah.
Yeah. The life and the work of Hunter S. Thompson. It's excellent. But yeah, like, what's the name of the show?
I don't know.
And it used to be hosted by Groucho Marx, even.
Oh well, that was different. But I know what you're talking about there.
But yeah, like you're trying to figure out who the person is, and they're like a celebrity.
Mm-hmm. The celebrity. I said crime committers earlier, so it's okay instead of criminals.
Yeah, you know, one of those crime committer guys.
Yeah, one of those crime committer
Oh,
people.
Congressman. Nah.
Oh, Republicans.
Nah. Oh, please. But anyway, at this point, we end up, this ends up being the Silence of the Lambs portion, I guess. We're going to make a coat out of you. I'm going to make a woman's suit out of this dog.
And it just becomes crazy and dark, and then the cat comes and saves all the puppies.
Well, I mean, it becomes like the Great Escape,
yeah,
right?
Really,
like,
totally.
Like they come out of the walls, and they're watching the end of the show, and they're like, and except for Fatso.
I think it's Horace who is is he the fat one? Horace?
Jasper's the fat one.
Jasper's the fat one. Okay, Jasper's trying to take a swig from this giant beer bottle, and he accidentally grabs the cat's neck.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, and I mean, when I was watching this, I'm like, this seems like a great Sunday. You're on the couch with a bottle of red wine, and you're just like, you're red wine drunk on an afternoon. Your legs are up on the couch, and you're watching TV. I mean, come on.
Surrounded by dogs and drinking cats.
Yeah. I mean, girl. But and just watching like bullshit fakes, like watching the like the game show channel. That like I got rid of the dish and everything.
The Food Network, you mean?
Whatever. Just like trying to figure out what the game actually is and you've never seen it before and you're like, I know that guy. Like that's the best thing. Like they know the criminal on like and he'll get it if you don't figure out what he's doing, kids, he'll get a free 2 weeks paid vacation. Assuming he gets parole, and he just looks Willie so Horton. Sad.
Yeah.
So sad.
Oh no, that was a mean joke. Just then.
That's fine. We trucked past it.
Good
but,
for you.
But while they're waiting for the show to end, there's literally a clock. Like the movie creates a ticking clock.
It does.
The dogs sneak out the hole. The cat, the corporal, whatever his rank is, sneak him out. And just as the last dog, Rollo, gets stuck. Horace realizes what's happening. He throws the beer bottle or the wine bottle, mm-hmm. and it all goes to hell. And they're trying to figure out how they'll kill him.
Pongo and Purdy are also in the vicinity, right?
They're on their way.
Well, they're on their way to this place because they've been told where the dogs are.
Yeah, right. And at this point, like you have two movies happening at once. Horace and Jasper are trying to kill them. And then outside, a Holocaust picture is happening as they're trudging through the snow trying to escape the murderers.
Oh, there was
it's
that.
Something.
I was going to use Follow That Bird, where Big Bird's trying to go home and all Sesame Street's trying to meet him in the middle. So
yeah, but the trudging in the snow,
okay,
man.
Okay, you're right.
This is like Schindler's List.
That really is.
The gold in my collar. I could have saved so many more if I had just sold the gold in my collar.
Well, I mean, that really was a poignant scene when those three Dalmatians are hiding in the outhouse.
Yeah, right. And that one Dalmatian's collar is colored red.
Yeah.
Wait. did you notice that all the male dogs wore red collars and all the female dogs wore blue collars?
I did.
Well, because Disney is sexist.
Please, it helps to gender things because you want to make sure you know if they have balls or not.
No, yeah.
I mean, you know, yeah, you gotta tell.
But they're trudging through the snow. They're trying to hide their tracks. They're trying to figure it out. There's a scene. I only mention this now because they redo it in the live action one, which is a weird scene. But they have cows that they find, and the cows feed the dogs because the dogs are starving, and they literally collapse from exhaustion.
Yeah,
yeah.
And you have a sheepdog who looks like, I don't know, like a 1940s actor. Mm-hmm. I'm here to keep watch. Like I mean, that's why it felt like a Holocaust pick to me. Like, because people are trying to escape, they're hiding out in like the Underground Railroad kind of thing. Whatever, pick your metaphor.
No,
but it is bleak.
Yeah, no, it definitely does evoke that feeling. Fun fact, another fun fact that I read, apparently the one thing that people got up in arms over this movie about, the dogs sucking at the cow's udders.
Oh. Really?
Yeah, not the fact that, you know, they're trying to make coats out of the puppies or they described how they're going to kill the puppies,
yeah,
hit them over the head, you know, things like that. Nope. It was the udder.
You know, it's
the
funny.
Udder what?
The utter truth. The truth of it all, Daniel.
Oh, Daniel.
I will say, this is something I guess we'll talk about in the live action version, because there's a remake of this that's better than the animated version. But maybe it's that this is the live action one makes reference to the fact that other animals are missing.
Mm-hmm.
This one doesn't.
Yeah.
Like, she's wearing fur, but everyone wears fur. It's the 60s, I guess, ? But, like, there's not the constant threat, right?
That's the thing. In the 60s, fur was, like, you know, fur was popular.
Yeah.
The early 60s, especially, before everybody switched to miniskirts.
Right. Well, I mean, and to wit, she makes reference to, like, all women love fur, and you don't have to sell that line. In the live-action version later, they have to be like, don't you? And she's like, not really. Because in the 90s, it's weird to have a giant fur coat.
Well, 90s was the height of PETA throwing paint on fur. Yeah.
Well, yes. And did you know anyone with a big fur coat? I mean, like, your grandmother?
My grandmother.
Like, because I think my grandmother had one. But even by that point.
Well, but it stayed in the back of her closet.
Right. She never wore it.
Exactly.
Right? Leather culture. I mean, it's the 90s. Like, yeah. I still now wish I had a big bomber jacket. Cause,
yeah, there you go.
I mean, you want to talk about like fake machismo sexy. Like,
oh, please. Big old biker leather daddy jacket. Oh, shoot. I've got one of those.
Oh, I mean, come on. It was in the 90s. All you had to do was tie a shirt around your waist.
I mean, to fair. Vote for Reagan. Tell you that. Anyway, at this point, we get to a small town. The town, Horace and Jasper and Cruella appear right at the last minute. So rather than, say, just sneak onto the truck that's going to take them back to London, they do the blackface thing to look like Labs.
Oh, they find soot. Yeah. To make them look like Black Labs. And at this point, Pongo and Purdy have showed up to meet their puppies, and it was Pongo that came up with the idea of wearing blackface.
This is a please.
No, I mean, I'm just saying it's probably one of the most only socially acceptable methods of blackening one's appearance in history.
Yeah.
Well, I'm just wondering how that works. Like, well, we're missing 99 Dalmatians, but these are 99 Black Labs.
Oh, I know. I mean, and it shows the, this is also very Silence of the Lambsy, because she's like, there's 100 dogs here, but not the 100 I want. Right? Like, yeah. You know what I mean? Like, black dogs? Like,
well, I mean, that scene with Purdy wearing the night vision goggles, tracking Cruella.
And then Cruella helps her, asks her to help move a couch.
Yeah.
Silence of the Lambs.
Did you breastfeed her, Purdy?
You smell like Chanel number 5 and milk bones. The milk bones. Do you think they're fancy? The organic feed you get from the Petco organic section, it doesn't suffice, does it? You still have to eat out of the garbage, don't you? The garbage!
You're trying to escape from your past, Pongo.
When you had testicles? Do you remember when you had testicles, Pongo?
What happened to them, Pongo?
So there's another song at the end, so that's pleasing.
Yes.
Anyway, the like literally again, like a Holocaust film, the Nazis are closing in. They toss the last puppy on. They barely make it onto the truck, and then Cruella tries to ram the fucker off the road. This poor guy.
Well, this is the most terrifying scene in the movie. This is one of the scenes I remember from being a child. Is her driving that car with her eyes and her hair, and it was just terrifying.
Well, and the poor schmuck who's just driving a truck to town.
Exactly.
It's like, what is wrong with this woman?
Is this the scene where she's ramming into him and he literally looks over his shoulder and goes, crazy woman driver?
Yes.
Oh my goodness. I mean, we glossed over the line, but at one point Luck even goes, she's trying to make coats out of us. And you're just like, oh, she's just, because here, she just goes full out, like, if I'm not going to have them, they should be dead.
Right, exactly.
Oh.
It's terrible. Well, that whole thing of she's trying to make coats out of us, I was like, oh my God. You know, this is just stepping up the wrongness.
Yeah. And then at the end, it all ends. There's a car accident. Horace and Jasper, who've gone a different way over the same hill.
Mm-hmm.
Collide with Cruella, knock her into a gully, and the truck driver knows better than to stop, which is kind of the best. Like, he doesn't ask for information. He doesn't figure. He's just like, bitches be crazy. And then he just goes.
He just keeps on going.
At this point, everyone gets the dogs, and they decide to move out west to have a Dalmatian plantation.
Oh, yeah, that is the second song.
Our population can grow. It's very charming. And
it is.
Then they zoom out on a giant farm.
It's nonsensical, though. I mean, why?
Dude.
If 99
I will say.
Hold up.
Just because.
Dog people are crazy.
Dog
people are crazy.
As crazy as cat people. But also, midway through, we cut back to when Purdy and Pongo decide to do the Twilight Bark. His Cruella de Vil song is playing on the radio. So now he is making money to do it. Mm. And if you could have an office where you could do your writing out in the countryside, you'd do it anyway. Like they don't make a big deal about it because at this point movies could be subtle, which apparently in 96 they couldn't be. We'll get to that. But like here the song is playing quietly on the radio. You just hear Cruella de Vil after some Sinatra knockoff.
Mm.
He has the money. He can move out of the city, which was part of the earlier plot anyway, and they managed to bring the help along with them.
Speaking of that, do you remember when Disney turned the Beatles into a barbershop quartet?
I do.
Me too.
Mm. I mean, you guys have seen it. If you don't know what Daniel's talking about, it's called Country Bear Jamboree. Hey, Ringo, you look like a bear. Like, anyway.
Oh, my God.
At this point, I think we should wind it up. Ringo. So... you guys can tune in next week for the next movie, but we'll go around the horn. We'll start with Charlie Buddy and then go to Daniel, and then was this worth it?
No, this was absolutely worth it. It was probably one of the best Disney movies ever. I can't believe how good it was considering it didn't have songs. Every single one of the Disney movies I've seen that didn't really have songs were absolutely terrible. They were a complete flop. This movie has a fantastic story. It's not too long. The characters are lovable. The animation is amazing in my mind. Mm-hmm. The way they drew those dogs, brilliant. It is truly a classic. It holds up. It doesn't fail.
Excellent.
Thank you.
I feel like Bill Lumberg right now because it's like, yeah, I'm going to have to disagree. Not in terms of whether or not this movie is good because it actually is perfectly charming for what it is. It's just I kind of like it when Disney doesn't try and shoehorn musical numbers into their movies. And it helps the narrative, which I really think is the case with this one. This is like a tight 80 minutes. It's a very tight narrative. It's a very exciting narrative. And you care about whether or not the puppies get saved, which at the end of the day is the best they can do. So for what it is, it's perfectly charming and you should check it out.
Yep. I'm not going to go as far as Charlie, but I think it's definitely in my top three. I think the best is Dumbo. And I think the second best is Snow White. And I think this is third. And of those three, I'd rather watch this one again right now.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, I think this one is utterly charming. I think the songs are good. And I think to both of your points, I don't think they always need songs. I expect Disney to have them. These are diegetic songs. He's actually singing them, not because he feels like breaking into song, but because he's a musician. And I know people like this. I'm kind of like this, where you just walk down the street humming to yourself. And that's how it's always portrayed. And we didn't talk about it, but the scene when Cruella's in the house, the song has been invented, and he's blasting it through every instrument he owns as though he's mocking her.
Yeah.
And she doesn't know why, but she's offended. It's the greatest. And he has the trombone, and he's yelling at the wall that she's a bitch. And then he comes down with, like, a tiara on and, like, the biggest feather boa, and he's like, you think that Cruella is a devil? And you're just like, and the song is not done. The man just, This movie's utterly charming. If you haven't seen it, you need to see it now. And unfortunately, Disney makes it hard, but we all found copies. You can find a copy. Do it. It's worth your time. And then I guess tune in next week when we see if the 96 version is worth your time. I wouldn't hold my breath. But stay tuned next week and every future week when I put a piece of your past on trial. Thanks, guys.
Oh, Pongo. It's her. It's that devil woman.
Oh, must be Cruella, your dearly devoted old schoolmate. Cruella de Vil. That's it.
My Okita Finger Childhood is produced by Do Better Podcasting and a member of the ESO Network. It is hosted by Nick Hoffman, edited by Daniel Suttis and Anne Burr. It is produced by Daniel Suttis, Matthew Quinn, and Anne Burr. Thomas Herman is our consultant. Nick Hoffman is our executive producer. The theme song is Surf Shimmy by Kevin MacLeod. Find it at incompetech.com. Is licensed under the Creative Commons license. Thanks.
Let her in, Nanny.
Anita, darling.
How are you?
Miserable, darling, as usual. Perfectly wretched.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.